Six-Figure Developer Podcast. I'm John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And with us today, we have Steve Tingiris. Steve is a software guy turned entrepreneur. He's founder of Dabble Lab, partner and investor with Florida Funders, and founding board member of Tampa Bay Wave. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, Steve, why don't you tell us what a software guy turned entrepreneur is?
I started my career as a software engineer, and that morphed into I became a software trainer for a little while, and in doing that, ran into a couple of projects that started as side projects and evolved into bigger projects that from there turned into my first company, and I've sort of been on that road ever since. So. Over the past 18 years, I've started four companies and exited from three of those. And they've all been software companies, and I've always been the, when they started, the lead developer initially and product guy. And once they grew to the point where it was more than a handful of people, I stepped back and another more experienced and more able CEO stepped in, and I stayed head of product development, and the companies grew, and so I've kind of been a software guy from the beginning, and would still call myself a software guy. I still like to write code and be in it.
So what are your languages and technologies of choice these days?
Well, these days, most of what I do is Node and Python, but probably I've been coding for a long time, and I think, when you're in this business, you tend to touch everything at some point or another, but a lot of what I did over the years is .NET, C#, there were very early days VB, everything from PHP, ColdFusion, you name it, I've touched it probably at some point or another.
And what got you interested in software in the early days?
I've always been a tinkerer and a dabbler, and technology is a great place for doing that kind of stuff. There's always something new to play with, and something to figure out. And so I don't know that there was any specific event. I just kind of really liked it when I was exposed to it. My father had a BBS service, so I was around it early on, and it was something that always kind of had me.
And what was the catalyst in going from being a software guy into becoming an entrepreneur?
So I think for me, it kind of happened. I'd love to say I had a master plan and had it all mapped out, but I was hired to look into a software project, and I was doing that as an independent guy, and the project turned into a bigger project than one person could stay on top of. And so I found another guy to help me out, and before I knew it, we were 25 people, and it just sort of happened. And that was that's how I got into being an entrepreneur. Certainly, once you start hiring people and bringing on customers, or at least I learned a lot fast, in some cases the hard way. But it was for me just sort of a natural progression, I guess.
So you're founder of Dabble Lab, and you mentioned that you've always been kind of dabbling in a number of different projects. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Dabble Lab, what it is, and the goal of that particular venture?
Yeah. So Dabble Lab really started like just to be exactly what the name says. I sold my last company in 2015, actually 2014. And it was a company called Enthusim.com, and they're still up and running. But I exited from the company and decided to just take some time off to really focus on what I've always loved, which is just playing with different technology. And so I took all of 2014 for the most part to just kind of spend time. I did a little traveling and a lot of dabbling, and everything that I didn't have time to do while I was, building a company. There's all kinds of technologies that I wanted to play with that just when you're working on building a business, you just don't have as much time as you'd like to have. And as a part of that, I ended up hiring a few people to help work on a couple of ideas that I had. So I ended up with a small product development team, just three of us initially. And that just kind of turned into a couple of products that I thought were good ideas that we weren't able to get as much traction as I hoped with. But what we did get is some attention from a couple of companies that approached us and asked if we would help with some dabbling for them. So we ended up getting hired to work as sort of a fractional / on-demand R&D team. And what we were doing more specifically was we were playing with some voice applications, and we got into like the Amazon Alexa developer program very early on, and kind of I got an invite to buy one of the Alexas in late 2014, and started messing with it in 2015, and just got really excited about it early, and so we started doing that, and it now have grown. And we've got developers that are working on a variety of different projects, but it is still very much in the dabbling spirit. So we're working with small, medium, and a couple of larger companies to help them prototype various products for different industries, but to try to stay ahead of the curve. So technology across business today is, it's not just technology companies. Every company relies on technology, but not every company is a software company, and not every company is able to have a technology or an R&D team that's prototyping and dabbling and keeping them updated with what's happening and finding opportunities to leverage technology to go further, faster. And so what Dabble Lab has become is it's kind of a R&D team for hire, so sort of fractional R&D team. And we work with clients that have ideas or that want to pull us in to help them prototype products, software products mostly.
How do you like working with Alexa? Do you have you had a lot of success with it, or had a lot of opportunity to work with it?
We've done quite a bit with it. I mean, right now, I mean, it's I think Alexa, not just Alexa, but just voice in general, is, in my opinion, it's where the web was in 1995, or where mobile apps were in 2007. It's very early days, and while Alexa has a lot of traction right now, as do, the other voice platforms, the Google Home, and now Cortana is winding up, and Apple has their iHome product. So the voice speakers and the voice assistants have gotten a lot of press. But I think from a application development standpoint, you know, it's still early days. I mean, I don't know of a lot of companies that have figured out like the monetization of this yet, you know, other than, you know, Amazon and some of the other big players. But that said, you know, I think that the potential for the technology and the, not just the voice recognition and the natural language processing, which is kind of the front end to it, but the back end and the agents that are behind it, the, you know, the machine learning and the artificial intelligence that is creating conversational apps. I think the potential for that is something that's going to have a huge impact, and it already is, but I think it's just begun. And my expectation is that when voice computing evolves to the point where it's like 99% accurate, so it can recognize commands and intent even in noisy places or when somebody has an accent, and that'll happen, we'll see the voice as an interface, as a user interface. My expectation is that it'll be one of the predominant interfaces, and if we don't have to tap or type, and we can talk, that most people would do that over using a standard interface. So I believe that for sure. And so to answer your question, we've done a lot of dabbling, and we've got done a number of skills that are in the store, but the it's still early days, so we haven't made a bunch of money with any voice products yet.
So do you think that voice is going to rule the market, and keyboards are going to be only for developers at some point, or is there still going to be a significant level of physical interaction in computing?
I think it's an alternative, you know. So while there will be computer or keyboards around for a long time, I'm sure, and you know, the voice is not going to replace interfaces, all other interfaces. There's visual interfaces, and they're not going away, and touch and tap interfaces that aren't going away. I think it has it's a better fit for a lot of environments where you just can't use keyboards. So like in a car, for example, while you're driving, it's a great interface for working inside of a vehicle. Multitasking now, when I'm working on the keyboard and I have a thought, I tell Alexa to add it to my to-do list, or if I think about a meeting that, you know, I should be scheduling, I use voice to schedule that. And it's just the ambient kind of passive nature of it is something that is just super convenient. And when you start using it, it's hard to imagine that once it gets good, that everybody won't be using it. And I've got my house all wired with all the smart home stuff, and my wife is not super technical, but I watch how she uses Alexa, and it's passive stuff, and it's stuff like she'll be watching a movie and she'll say, "Alexa, how old is so-and-so, the actor, actress?" Or, you know, what's coming up next? Or, you know, cooking, you know, how many ounces are in a cup? Or, you know, just it's things like that you almost don't even think about. And when you watch that as a technologist, it's kind of exciting, because I think those are the technologies that really take off, or the ones that just become a part of our life. You know, we don't even really think about them. They're just there. And I think voice has that kind of potential.
Yeah. So that used to be the test for me for a usable web application. I would maybe put it in front of my parents and see if I can get my dad through the user interface, then it was intuitive, and it was something that people could understand easily, could adapt to, and could utilize. So it's interesting to find out how voice is going to be used. As we're speaking, I'm trying to come up with what is going to be the catalyst for making voice UI the new go-to. I'm thinking there's probably going to be some security issues in healthcare or doctors and hospitals, so you might not want to do some of that, at least in patient-facing interfaces. But you said in driving, in vehicles, in productivity and scheduling, what's going to be the big breakthrough that makes voice UI the go-to?
Yeah. So actually we're working on a couple of medical apps that I can give you like high level or skills, I should say high level. And our focus is on business applications for voice, more so than consumer. And so I can tell you about a few that we're dabbling with, but one that is real simple, actually, we're for one of our clients, we're building a voice dashboard. And so it's an Alexa skill that allows their executive management team to get real-time business stats on, you know, on demand. You know, so, hey, Alexa, what are sales numbers today in, you know, whatever region? You know, Alexa, you know, how many visits did we have today to, you know, our site, and how does that compare to what we had yesterday? But so everybody's familiar with the idea of a business dashboard. It's basically that via voice, you know, so any one of their executives, and, you know, they all have Alexas on their desk. And now with the Amazon Echo Show, You don't just have the voice first experience where you can talk and ask those things, but you also have a little screen that you can use to present information. So the combination of a voice with the screen is providing some really neat things. And that's a good segue into another skill that we're working on, which is a medical for the medical industry. And it's an Alexa skill that does a patient consultation. And so it's a conversational app that walks new patients through questions that were normally something that a nurse practitioner would walk the patient through, and you know, can collect the responses in a more friendly way. And and so, you know, I think there, you know, I think there's all kinds of different voice possibilities that are and a lot that we can't imagine now. But if you just break it down to people are conversational, and if that is any indicator of how people would prefer to interact, and I think it is, if computers can be conversational, people will prefer to interact with machines the way that they prefer to interact with other people.
So while you were talking about the conversational part and the questions that would normally be asked by a nurse practitioner, it got me thinking. Several years ago, I went to go set up a new account at a bank, and instead of a person talking to me, they set me down at a tiny desk, and the tiny desk had a phone, and I actually had to pick up the phone in the bank and have a conversation with a voice recognition system in order to set up my bank account. And I realized that voice has come a long way since then, because this was 10 years ago. But I found that particular experience to be wholly frustrating.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances of the voice recognition systems being abused in that sort of manner, where the user would much rather prefer to have an actual person or some other kind of interface?
So I get this all the time. The first time I connected to the internet took me hours. You know, I had to figure out baud rates and, you know, modem settings. And if somebody asked me, you know, at that time, if I thought that everybody would be using the internet passively on their phones, I probably would have said, no, nobody's going to go through the pain of this. It sucks. But technology gets better. And so if you just don't think about the experience as it is today, think about the experience as it could be based on where it is today, 3 to 5 years from now. And it's getting easier and easier for everybody, I think, to imagine that in their head, because, you know, there was a time when nobody would use ATMs because, you know, they were just so clunky and so hard. And why wouldn't you want to talk to the friendly bank teller that you're used to seeing every day? But fast forward 10 years, you know, the technology's gotten a lot better and it becomes passive and easy. And I think today, yeah, there's going to be lots of frustrated people with a lot of what we have to work with in you know, the world of voice. But when you take just really small things, like Alexa, how do you spell serendipitous, right? Like, she can spell better than I can. I mean, any day of the week. And that's one very, very small task, but it's one that has value. And when you just keep building on those little things, and again, you know, think of where we were with the web in 1995, you know, and where it is now, or social media or anything, you know? And so I don't think about where voice is today as much as I think about where it could be 5 years from now, or even 3 years from now. When I first got the Echo, January or of 2015, I think, is when I actually got it. And I was talking to, you know, one of the other guys, we were playing around with it, and I said, this is so cool, but it's going to be years before anybody's using this. And less than 2 years later, it was one of the top selling gadgets during Black Friday. I think it was like a year and a half later. So it's moved a lot faster than I would ever guessed. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, it's improving much faster than I would have guessed. I mean, the voice recognition is better, and it gets better every day. I mean, you know, stringing multiple utterances together to ask Alexa to do something, you know, one day it won't work, and the next day it'll work. You know, it just keeps getting better and better. So I think it's going to go quicker than we might expect.
Yeah, I'm curious about how the companies are marketing these the physical units. They seem to be marketing them towards the home user, the home automation. You know, as we're talking, I'm thinking more about business case uses. You know, I've worked in warehousing, distribution, and fulfillment services. You can automate a lot of the processes there, and a lot of companies are currently automating processes, but through the use of regular keyboard and maybe touch interaction, there's got to be a path forward using voice recognition and voice UI in some of these processes. Do you think there's an opportunity or to market more towards business case uses, or do you think that's happening already?
For sure, it's happening. I mean, there's you know. You know, there's lots of businesses that are looking at it and going, how do we use this? Where can we use it? And there's lots of possibilities. The Echo Show, for example, like what we're doing right now on Google Hangouts, the Echo Show is a little it's got a camera and a little screen on it, so you could be doing this through the Echo, which you say, yeah, we can do it with our laptop, but the show allows for like drop-in features, which could be really cool for remote workers. So if you're working together as a team, and more of us are, you know, working remote these days with remote teams, but just being able to drop in on a coworker, you know, especially when you're working on a technical project or something like that, where it almost feels like you're sitting in the same office, I think that has a lot of potential. The messaging now is, there's lots of interesting things that you can you could do with the Alexa messaging, and I think we're just getting started with the business possibilities.
So it sounds like you've been having good success in your entrepreneurship ventures. If you had it to do all over again, would you stay a software guy? Would you have continued the same path that you're on now? Would you have made the transition to entrepreneurship earlier in your career?
I think would not want to change anything. I mean, things have worked out. The one thing I would say though is, the M in that most is important, like understanding what your personal motivations are. I think for a long time, I, as an entrepreneur, I tried to, you know, to turn the corner and become the CEO. And that seems like the natural path. That's not what I do well. You know, there's a very big difference between starting a company and developing a product and managing a development team, an early stage development team and building a management team and hiring and building an organization. They're very, very different. So the one thing that I've realized is I'm a product guy more so than a CEO, and it took me a lot of time to get to that point. So if I was to do anything over, I would continue to move toward entrepreneurship, but understanding hopefully what my strengths were and really focusing on doing what I love to do and playing toward my strengths and finding the right people to work with that complement those skills to handle the business side. That's all I would change, but I've been very fortunate and love the journey.
Do you have any specific advice for maybe individuals that might be on a similar path, or how do you go about defining and deciding the things that you're good at?
I think a lot of times it's those things that you might work really hard at that don't feel like work. Like you can get up early and you can stay up late, and it doesn't really feel like a tough thing to do. That's probably a hint toward the thing that you're wired for. Also, what you do well and naturally well, I think is something else that you kind of want to pay attention to. And everybody, everybody has their thing, and a lot of times we all, myself certainly included, will tend to recognize other people's things and want to, be like them in some cases. And so that can distract you from realizing what you're really good at. And for sure, better to focus on the things that you personally are wired for and enjoy doing, and just be awesome at that, as opposed to trying to force yourself into somebody else's shoes because you think that's a better path to, whatever success or happiness you're going after.
Do you have any other outstanding items that you're working on, or any exciting news to share with us?
No, I'm working on a side project that I'm kind of having fun with. This is a project that started as an idea for a system to grade a business plan or a concept, a business idea. And the way that it worked is you answered a bunch of questions and it would generate kind of like a FICO score sort of, based on your answers. And it was a business concept quality grade, I suppose. And we've been taking that and turning it into a bot that we rolled out in a test pilot for the University of Florida and also the University of Tampa here, and we rolled it out for their entrepreneurship program. And it's an AI system, a machine learning system that lets the students have a conversation. So it's a conversational platform with the bot, that interviews them like a VC would about their business and their business plan. And it will not get into the business ideas so much as the model mechanics. So for example, what is the average value of a customer? How much do you think it's going to cost to acquire those customers? How big is the market? Those kinds of things. And it knows on the back end, sort of can take your input and spit back comments based on that input. So for example, if your average customer is worth $1,000 and there's 10,000 of them out there and you need to raise $5 million to make that business work, well, that's probably not going to happen, right? Because you need more money than the market is worth if you had all those customers. Or, if you've got a customer and it's going to cost you 70% of the value of that customer just to acquire them. So those kinds of things the bot can coach the user through. So that, for me, that's been a fun one.
So you could technically get a really good score with a really bad idea, as long as you thought it out really well.
Yeah, and a big part of what the bot is doing is trying to get people to do exactly that, to really think through how the dots connect on a business plan. Because sometimes you'll get, especially younger entrepreneurs, that will get so enamored with the idea that they'll forget about the business side of it. And I've been guilty of that, although I'm not younger anymore. But the so part of it is to try to get them to game it, because if they do, they understand how the business model metrics work. And so that actually is a piece of what we're trying to accomplish.
Sounds like a good prep interview before going on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, do you have any parting words of wisdom for our audience?
Keep coding, keep building great stuff and keep doing what you love.
Steve, thanks so much for being a guest.
Hey, my pleasure. I enjoyed it. And thanks for the invite to be on the show.
Thanks so much. That was Steve Tingeris, software guy turned entrepreneur, founder of Dabble Lab, partner and investor in Florida Funders, founding board member, Tampa Bay Wave. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you.
This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.